The reading this morning is taken from Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 to 31. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, good morning. So, today, we come to the end of both the book of Proverbs and the 6 weeks' look at various parts of this book, attributed mainly to King Solomon, but with Agur and Lemuel contributing to the later sections, possibly today's passage too. But how can we sum up the whole in just a paragraph? One introduction to the whole book suggests that its purpose is to teach people to be understanding, just and fair in everything they do. To make the simple-minded wise, to warn young men about some problems they will face, and to help the wise become good leaders. In short, to apply divine wisdom to daily life, and to provide moral instruction. So, that's the whole book. What about today's verses? When I first read them, I wondered idly, if it was Wonder Woman, or possibly Xena, but certainly not Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or even the female heroine from Little House on the Prairie. But enough of this idle thought, and down to the kernel. These 22 verses are written as an acrostic poem, each verse beginning with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And you can make your own acrostic poems up when you get out of here. In some ways, this praise for the ideal wife coming at the very end of Proverbs sums up the whole book. The ideal wife can be seen as wisdom herself, the virtue that is portrayed as a woman in earlier chapters. In Proverbs 9, verses 1 to 6, which we heard about in week 3, wisdom was seen as a woman who builds a house with 7 pillars, then invites simple people to eat with her. There is a sense of a good woman being a gift from God to those around her. And this follows on from advice earlier in the book about falling in with the right crowd. But it also goes beyond this, for a good woman can influence the whole household. Later we shall see how her children, those who work for her, and the whole community, including the needy, benefit from her goodness. She sets a virtuous circle in motion, spurring on those around her to do the right thing, in verse 10. And in verses 11 to 14, she is providing for the household and being a good shopper. It reminds me of cartoons by Posy Simmons about the many roles a modern woman has to play. There is the provident housewife laden with supermarket bags, the angel of the hearth furnishing a comfortable home, and even the strumpet of the boudoir, catering for her husband's needs, a comment I hasten to add attributed to Rachel Boulding, sometime editor of the Church Times, not me. The point is, of course, is that a woman has to be all of these things, even if she ends up exhausted by being pulled in different directions. Then moving on to verses 15 to 18, these show the ideal woman, not just as wife, mother, and domestic goddess, but as an employer and businesswoman. She goes beyond the private household sphere and out into property development and trading. She's certainly no clueless trophy wife, indulging herself with shopping and pampering, as seems to be the ideal for some of those in the tabloids today. So perhaps we should wonder why we haven't drawn on this passage more to justify women working outside the home. Here is a patriarchal voice praising a woman who prospers in a man's world. She is capable, efficient, and wise, and us men could learn a great deal from her. As we saw earlier, this ideal woman is also frighteningly up to date. She's like many women throughout the world who hold down jobs as well as running a household. At the same time, she shares much with women from the third world in doing hard physical labour. There is a statistic from a United Nations report about how women do nearly two-thirds of the world's work, and at the end they receive only one-tenth of the world's income and own less than one-hundredth of its property. We do not seem to have made much progress in the 2,500 or so years since Proverbs was composed. Women are still exploited in rich and poor countries alike. Sometimes it's their own fault, as they don't always ask for help with domestic tasks or train their children to do them, but often choose to work for money to maintain either higher standards of living or luxuries, such as larger homes. However, women want to provide for their children as best they can and very often have no choice but to work hard. So perhaps these four verses provided a justification for such pressures and desires, and perhaps also offers a blessing for our labours, which so often seem to be taken for granted. Continuing in verses 19 to 22, can I wonder if there is no end to this woman's perfection, at least in verse 20, which emphasises her generosity to the poor. Without this, she could seem self-serving, looking only to herself and her own. The idea of almsgiving is yet another sound notion that can become so familiar that some only pay lip service to it. Fundraisers often say that their job is a matter of persuading people that first, the cause is deserving, and second, that they can really afford it. There are churchgoers who seem to think that it is someone else's job to keep the church going, when many of us could probably give more if we wanted to. We shouldn't need to have our arms twisted. God has given us everything, so it should be part of our joyful response. All things come from you, and of your own do we give you, as is still said in many churches during the offertory. And then just think of the widow's mite, as from in Mark 12. Jesus praises her for pouring out all that she had. And then for many of us, including our ideal woman, there is something left after our generosity. The fine linen and purple suggested opulence and dignified taste, perhaps Armani rather than Versace. But it doesn't say that such luxury is wicked in itself. Rather, it seems to be the woman's reward for her diligence. We need not be afraid of elegance. We don't have to sacrifice everything to a crabbed sense of duty. Sometimes people who argue for uglification and the neglect of God's gifts of beauty are like Judas Iscariot, who suggested that Mary's expensive perfume was wasted on Jesus and she should have sold it and given the money to the poor. Sometimes when we do this, like Judas, we are hiding greater sins and perhaps wouldn't give the cash to charity anyway. When faced with a street collection, do we cross the street thinking, I'm not going to give money to that cause, even if it will go further in the third world, but do we then never get round to giving to the third world ourselves? So, skating round this vexing personal problem and moving on to verses 23 to 27. Now, verse 23 is the one that really makes women protest. All this time as the idle woman has been beavering away, her husband is simply sitting with the elders. It looks as if she does the work and he just has a good time chatting. This might not be the whole story. Perhaps her husband does other things too. Somehow his idleness seems horribly credible, however. And during over 40 years in work, when I had to go 50 years ago dressed like this, like a dog's dinner, I used to notice some bosses, usually male, just swanning around, possibly going to meetings and looking important whilst their underlings are the ones who really got the job done. But what can we do about our sense of injustice of this situation? As mentioned earlier, we can speak up for a fairer sharing of tasks, both personally and on a global scale. We don't have to be strident about it, but to try to see the situation from a more balanced perspective and represent our own and others' needs. We're all God's children, equally loved and deserving of respect. We can learn something from our ideal woman in her strength and dignity and wisdom in verses 25 and 26. She gets satisfaction from jobs well done. As with her generosity to the poor, she goes further than mere efficiency in her kindness. Could she possibly be the same people who responded to a survey about long working hours who said they enjoyed what they did and actually chose to work for longer? Can we all say that we get more out of putting more in? This chapter, and with it the whole book of Proverbs, ends with a reflection of the theme of justice. The hard-working woman should share in the benefits she has created and be acknowledged publicly at the city gates, the place where men gather, away from women's usual domestic domain. This is more than she might have hoped for in such a society. We all know women and other workers who are not given a word of encouragement, but here praise flows from the whole family. Quite rightly too, is my initial reaction. It's all very well for her children and husband to rise up and call her blessed, but do they actually help her out with the work? Are we too cynical in thinking that they don't, as they haven't been mentioned in connection with any of her tasks? The penultimate verse contains the only mention of God in this 22-verse poem. The highest praise a husband can give to the ideal wife is to say that she fears the Lord. And this neatly brings the book of Proverbs back to its beginning, which in part one we were told how the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Earlier chapters described wisdom, but here she is the person of a wife, mother, homemaker, and businesswoman. She has true knowledge, which she puts into practice. And this idea sets the perfect woman into context in terms of God's love for us all. The woman can see the truth, and all her actions spring from this core of her being. She may be only an imaginary idea, but that shouldn't stop each and every one of us from being inspired by the vision she sets before us. It is a vision of personal integrity, wholehearted love for others, and dedicated work to bring good to people. And finally, the best advice I can give is that we all should go and do likewise. Amen.